FM with Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein your way.
You are listening to Jenny Green most of the afternoon, and Jenny, I'm sorry if you think I'm going to let Marie Crowe off the hook for Fulham beating Liverpool. You have another thing coming.
But it's Monday, the 8th of March,
and this is game on.
Coming up today, we speak to Phil Healy after her terrific performance at the Europeans.
It is just short of the medals, and it's disappointing to be just so close, but it's a European final, it's a fourth place, it's a PB. I can't ask for any more.
We'll also speak to Amber Barrett, who is looking forward to her return to action.
The captain, Katie McCabe, lets the ball go early up towards the run of Denise O'Sullivan, and now Barrett for Ireland, and there's the lead goal. The Republic of Ireland take the lead after 13 minutes. Amber Barrett with the goal, Ireland in front in Athens.
And we're going to ask Stephen Kelly if Manchester City could possibly throw away the English Premier League.
Father, the last couple of days in Spain. His teammates he's left behind for Derby, and Shaw scores! Goodness me, it's Luke Shaw for Manchester United.
And we look back at a weekend of golf in America with Gary Murphy.
And some years I've felt like I've played well enough to win, and guys have just played a little bit better, and hopefully one of these years I'll be able to turn all those good finishes into a win here.
If you want to get in touch, please do so. You can text us on 51552, send us in your sporting highlights, or tweet us at Game on 2FM with your sporting highlights as well.
Game on 2FM.
Good weekend of action all round, guys, unless you are a Liverpool fan, but good weekend for you, Ruby, being a Manchester United fan.
Yes, it was, Marie. It was quite enjoyable to watch Bruno Fernandes and Luke Shaw scoring a couple of goals yesterday as United beat City 2-0. I thought Fulham were ferocious fighters. It was great to watch them as well. But Donegal, the rugby looked pretty good. The Interpros, what was your highlight from that?
Yeah, there was a lot. There was a lot of good rugby this weekend. I suppose the Interpros, you're right, Ruby, are the main talking point. Today's news, Keith Earls signed a new one-year contract with the RFU. Jacob Stockdale has been included into the Irish squad. The Munster Connor game is really close, went down to probably a brilliant bit of play by Mike Haley. I didn't know the fella could kick with his left, but he put a brilliant dink in overhead and was managed to chase it down and did really well to get a result. Munster have a lot of work to do. Their line-out underperformed, and there's areas they can improve on, but they gritted it out. And then the Ulster-Leinster game, Frank Murphy came in for a bit of a tough time. 5 yellow cards and 1 red. I'll be honest with you, I thought all of them were fair enough. I'll be completely fair, and I just think it's the way rugby's going, and we're going to see it for a little bit of time. Granted, it didn't have the flow everyone wanted, but I thought he did a good job of it, and everyone's going to say, yeah, of course, ex-teammates are going to stand up for each other. But I just thought the one with Andrew Warwick, where he bullbars Ed Byrne in the throat, was that can end really poorly. And I've seen teammates in Munster picking up really bad, fracturing their Adam's apple and not being able to speak and be in hospital for 4 weeks. So something like that needs to go to the game. But yeah, overall it was good, Ruby, it really was.
I might be harsh on Leinster, but it struck me watching it back, the forwards scored the first four tries and they were all Munster-esque.
No, Leinster have everything in the, as you'd call it, the toolbox. They can beat you everywhere. What I was most impressed with Leinster was their defence. Without the ball, they just looked brilliant. I was disappointed with Ulster, I must be honest, when they were the advantage of 13 men. I just thought they kicked away far too much possession and didn't really put it to them. But I thought Leinster had all the answers, looked really sharp, and yeah, another big, big performance.
How important is it now for this Munster team, squad, management, setup, everyone to get some silverware?
Yeah, it's massive, Marie. Honestly, 10 years is way too long. You know, it really is. And you know there's pressure when it comes to big games, but of course everyone counts caps and the amount of time they spend in the shirt. And you look at Keith Earls, someone that would have given an awful lot, and he was involved with us with European success. But we've gone too long now without you know, big days, and they're the ones that supporters, fans, everyone loves, and winning's important. So yeah, I agree, it's massive, it really is. You try to guard players from pressure, but you have to look back and say, yeah, not only did I add to it, but I left with a bit of a legacy. I won that, you know.
At the start of the season, and probably definitely early in the season, we were just talking about closing the gap on Leinster and what Munster need to do, and obviously they brought in a lot of big name players, and you know, we're seeing a lot more of maybe what Munster are about over recent months. Do you think that that gap is closed? Is it closed enough for them to win the trophy?
I don't know is the honest answer. I really don't. I think they definitely need probably to bring new guys through. That does need a bit of new blood. Like, I know this sounds crazy, but when we were successful, it was the likes of Barry Murphy, Jerry Flannery, Neane Dowling came in, and they, maybe there was a few of us scarred with having lost big matches, but those guys, it was new to them, and they were like, we've never lost before, you know. And I think maybe, you know, we chat about younger guys getting opportunity, but maybe, you know, there's two games now. We know Munster are true. It's an opportunity to have a look at different kind of combinations without being reckless, but just trying to get a massive build-up to what's going to be a big, big game.
Those two games too, Donegan, are going to be vital for Joey Carberry. He's surely a huge cog in that wheel. He came on again the weekend, kicked the winning penalty. Those games are going to help him as well.
Yeah, absolutely, Ruby. He's a different class. He really is. And you want Ben Healy, you want the likes of Jake Flannery, you want these guys, Jack Ronan, to be learning off guys like that. JJ's always played well, but there's just something special about Joey Carberry. So, of course, you don't want to push him, but the selfish side of you as a competitor, and you know better than anyone, you want the best guys out there. If you're going out there, you want the strongest team, and if they can get that now and they get a bit of security with guys like Earl C signing contracts, that just gives a bit of security around the place. Everyone's kind of feeling better going into it, and hopefully it can be. What's great, and what the Interpros said home to me at the weekend is, by far, and I know it mightn't reflect in Six Nations, but in Pro 14, we're hands above everyone else. Scotland, Wales, you know, Italy, the Irish provinces really are doing well.
Okay,
even
well,
thinking, you know, about the mindset there, Donica, even thinking about Joey Carberry, you imagine being out for as long as he's been out for. Could you imagine to come back and win something? Can you imagine what that's given him, the energy, the excitement that it's given his mentality?
But as well, Ruby, it's the other guys looking to guys. This is when we won in 08, we absolutely scraped through a pool. We'd no right to get through. And then Paul O'Connell came back from injury and we signed Doug Howlett. And like you should have seen, we just went through the roof. The whole squad just lifted because someone came back like Paulie that drives the standard. So to your point, you'd hope that Joey doesn't just come in and dip his toe, but he grabs it by the scruff of the neck and drives it on.
Okay, well, my highlight was Leona Maguire in the Drive-On Championship in Florida. She birdied her last two holes and shot a 2-under to share sixth place on 5-under par with defending champion Danielle Kang. And we will be talking to Gary Murphy about her performance very, very shortly. But first, there are some Premier League games. West Ham and Leeds is kicking off at 8 o'clock. But first, let's transfer over to Ian Beach at Stamford Bridge for Chelsea Everton.
Oh, good evening, guys. No goals yet. What have we been playing for? 11 minutes now, and it's quite a familiar pattern to Chelsea matches that we're seeing here. The pattern that we've seen since Thomas Tuchel became the manager, which is that Chelsea have lots of possession. They pass the ball around, but they don't seem to be too bothered by the fact that even though they have the ball for long periods, they don't get any shots on the opposition goal. The Everton team are certainly packing and their half of the field and closing up the spaces as much as possible, but it is lots of Chelsea passing to and fro, side to side, 10 yards forward, 10 yards back. But the Everton goalkeeper Jordan Pickford so far hasn't had too much to do. I'll tell you that Thomas Tuchel's actually made 5 changes for this game. I won't go through all of those, but suffice to say that he's clearly deciding to rotate and rest a few players and keep them as fresh as he possibly can. If either of these teams actually win tonight, they will go into the fourth place in the Premier League table, the last Champions League spot, of course. And if this were to be a draw, then in that game you mentioned a moment ago, Marie, later on between West Ham and Leeds, West Ham would have the chance to go into the top four if they win, but only if this match ends in a draw. At the moment, it is like that. Chelsea 0, Everton 0.
Okay, thanks very much, Ian. We will check in with you a little bit later on. Ruby, there was some racing today.
There was racing in Epperstown today, Marie. Yeah, and Willie Mullins' team continue in great form. He had the first 3 winners on the card with Gam Bernat, Elite Charbonnier, and Aubrey McMahon rode the 4th winner for him, or 3rd winner even, not the 4th. But his team continue in great order ahead of Cheltenham next week. But a quiet day in Leopardstown. Yesterday was probably better racing with French Dynamite winning the featured hurdle there on the Robert Powerful Mouse Morris, and Machuca winning the featured handicap chase when he got up on the line under Ricky Doyle to beat Live, Love, Laugh.
Okay, so it's only a week to go, really, Ruby. We are going to be doing a big Cheltenham preview night tomorrow night, which we're all very looking forward to, with Leon Blanche of Boyle Sports and Robbie Power as well. Just over the weekend, did you see anything, note anything that that stuck out that might be something to look forward to?
I think there was two horses in Kelso, Marie, on Saturday. A horse called My Drogo of Dan Skelton's won a novice hurdle, and he could be one for the festival. But also there was one of Emmett Mullins, as a horse called The Shunter, who won the Moor Battle hurdle in Kelso. Trained in Ireland, went to Kelso to win the race. But if he was to turn up next week in Cheltenham and win any race at the festival, he qualifies for £100,000 bonus. Now, he's entered in numerous races at the Cheltenham Festival next week. If I was anything to do with him, he'd be heading to the Grand Annual Chase early in the week to be having a go. But it's some lucrative bonus if he could follow up his Kelso success with a victory at the Cheltenham Festival next week.
Ruby, I'm going to embarrass you, but myself and Marie did it again. Jane Mangan gave us a great tip on Friday, and what did both of us do?
Forgot it.
Yeah, well, it just did absolutely.
To be fair, I told my dad.
I'll test your
memory. And he actually listened.
What was it?
It was, I know it was Alan Call. He was on it anyway.
Yeah, the Shunter, the horse I've just been talking about.
Brilliant. We should have been all over it,
Crow. I think it's time to move on. I think over the weekend, the athletics gave us great enjoyment. It was brilliant to see so many Irish athletes take centre stage, but the one that really stood out for us was Phil Healy, an impressive fourth in the 400 metre final, and she joins us now. Phil, you didn't come home with a medal, but you really lit up the track. Fair play. How are you now?
All good. Thanks a million for having me on. But no, I didn't come home with a medal, but to me, fourth is a medal. Like I might as well have a medal with fourth, because to produce a PB, to be that close to the medals on my third race in the 36 hours, to make a major senior final, like, I gave it everything, and I'm absolutely thrilled with my performance.
I heard lots of people say really nice things about you, Phil, but something that really stuck out in my mind was the phrase that you've arrived. Do you feel like you have now, that you're up there, you're with the elite, you're with the world class, the international class?
100%, and like even the top three girls, like, they have major international medals on the world stage and the European stage. So to be so close with them, and even the girl that was fifth behind me, like, she was ranked number two in Europe all year. She's absolutely stormed the whole indoor season. So, like, it's been unbelievable. And, like, there's been many major championships where I have messed up and things haven't gone to plan. So to make a major senior final, to produce the quickest time that I've ever ran, I couldn't be more happy and 100% arrived on that scene and ready to take it on further into the summer.
Phil, you were threatening to do it all weekend. You ran 52 dead in the heat, 52-41 in the semi-final, and then a PB in the final. But that's some tough schedule, three races in such a short space of time.
100%, and I don't think people, like, understand as well, like, even just watching on, sometimes the what it takes, because even, say, Friday morning I kicked off, like, I'd have got up at 7:30 that morning, and I raced at 7:45 again that night. So, like, a major championship takes a lot out of you, the energy-wise, and just going to and from the stadium and bringing yourself down to bring yourself back up again. But to come out on that final, like, the pressure was off as such at that point, because obviously in the qualifying round there's a lot at stake in terms of getting through to the next round. So for me, the final was more like of a race, a world-class race, a one-off race where anything can happen. And that's what happens at a championship. It's anything can happen, and I had nothing to lose, and I wanted to go out there and die fighting, and that's exactly what I did. So I'm really happy with my performance.
So the indoor racing looks so tight and so tactical, and even in the final, I know that the athletes that were drawn outside you eventually got across in front of you, but, like, even to get checked in your stride, it's so tight indoors, and it's so tough compared to outside racing.
Totally, and, like, indoors brings its own drama as such with that, and, like, even at the last two previous editions of European indoors, like, someone clipped me from behind in 2019, someone fell in front of me in 2017. So you can play the race and play the tactics out a million and one times over in your head before the race, but you have to react on your feet, and anything can happen. And in that final, everyone was speed based, so, like, anyone could have won to the bell. And we saw Jodie Williams, the British athlete, came from lane one on the inside. So it does bring that bit of excitement, and you have to be careful, but that's the joys of indoor running, and it does create a bit of fun.
We had Phelan Kelly on and Cathal Dennehy, and I'm not sure which one of them said it, but one of them said that the indoor is like a mix of UFC and running all together. And I think a lot of people who were sitting at home watching the athletics over the weekend, they really got an understanding of that, because there was a lot of pushing and shoving and just a lot of contact.
There is, and like, I could have sat back a little and let the other girls take the lead at the bell, or I could have put myself right in contention. So like, sometimes it's hard to know what to do, but like, you have to put yourself in contention, and if things don't go to plan, they don't go to plan, but you have put yourself out there and you've put yourself into the best possible position. And even say 300 metres into the race, I did have to check myself slightly and move out, but that's what happens, and it's what happens to everybody. And it does, it's exciting, and it's more fun indoors nearly than outdoors.
Phil, the confidence this must have given you, if you look at your time, that would have medalled in the last five editions of this championship. That must give you a bit of a boost.
100%, and like, it's a world-class stacked field, and like, I didn't want to be a semi-finalist all the time. I wanted to make that final, and I saw an article before I raced the final that I would need the race of my life. And like, reading that, I'm like, I'm sick of enough people like doubting me as such, or whether I would make the final, or a lot of success in Ireland is measured if you get a medal or not. And I went out there and I did produce the race of my life, and got that PB and was rewarded with the fourth place, and it might as well be a medal to me. And like, even walking through the media zone after, I did get sick everywhere because I knew I had given it my all, and they had to give me a black bag through the rest of the media zone. So to me, that black bag is my medal, because I knew I walked through with giving it my all.
You wouldn't be the first, and you won't be the last that will need a black bag after a race. But just interestingly, I think, Phil, for me anyway, I noticed there was just an awful lot of hype before this championships, and not in a bad way. I thought it was great to be celebrating such a big team heading over, and to be analysing and assessing what could potentially happen. And just some of your teammates, there was a lot of them that went into this championship with, you know, high ranked pretty high in their fields, like the 800 girls and like Mark English, and it just didn't work out for so many of them. And since then, there's been a lot of people discussing just the difference between championship running and just going out on the circuits and running, and you really showed that you can do the championship running.
100%, and championship running brings it its own challenges, and like, anyone can produce a one-off time, and that is on the circuit, but like, that takes another level of like, to succeed as well. And like, it is so important to have the quick times coming into a major championship in terms of ranking, but anything can happen. Like, I went into Glasgow 2 years ago, ranked fifth, and everyone was saying, oh, I'm a medal hope, and I absolutely blew it in the first round, which didn't set me up for the second round. So anything can happen. Tactics come into play. Some people just have a bad day, but it was great to be a part of a team, such a big Irish team with so many great performances, and such a young team. And like, I'm just gone 26, and I felt really, almost really old on the on the team. But like, it was just to see so many people produce performances. Like, Sarah Lavin produced a PB, Keane Max-Phillips, like, you would swear he was on the European stage at major championships the whole time with his level of maturity. And it was just great to see that. Obviously, some performances didn't go to plan for some people, but loads of Irish athletes went out there and fought and walked off the track happy.
It's really hard to get it right, Phil, isn't it? Just when you think of the situation that we're in with COVID and trying to get those ranking points, and then trying to decide what to do about focusing on championships and focusing on Olympics, and just trying to peak at the right times. But you seem to have that on track, and I'm sure loads of credit goes to your coach, Shane McCormack, for that.
100%, and Shane leads the way, and like, without Shane, I wouldn't be there on the track in Turin and like, coming forth. So, and it was a strange championships because Shane was at home, and like, in the last 7 years that he's coaching me, that was probably his fourth race that he's ever missed. So like, it was weird in that way. And of course, it had to be the one where I was in the final and fourth, that this was great and he was at home. But 100%, all the credit goes to Shane, and he leads the way with the team and the support that we have. And like, it's that network of people around you that bring the performance out. So it is so important. And we did decide to sit on competing throughout the indoor season, and we didn't race abroad just because of the risks and different things like that. But it all worked out for us because we got to push training out another bit. But I definitely keep Shane on his toes in terms of like planning with just the different events, with the 200, with the 400, but he takes care of all of it, and I do the easy job of going and out there and running.
Phil, as myself and Dunica well know, when sport is over, it's over, and it's about the next target. So what's the future holding? Are you back in training this week? Are you looking forward?
Yeah, so this week will just be a bit of a down week. I'll still definitely tip away. I know I have training at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning anyway, but it is about looking forward and straight back into training again and just producing the next block after next block, because the summer rolls around really quickly. Like, we will start racing again towards the end of May, the qualification for Olympics in the end of June. So I have my qualification in the 200 for Tokyo. I am ranked 29th out of 56, so I just need to secure that position. And we are going to give it a shot as well and try and qualify for the four for Tokyo. It is a high possibility that I can get in both. The ranking points and bonus points from the weekend will really push me up there, and I just need three quality races outdoor. So they don't clash when it comes to racing in Tokyo, so hopefully we can be there in both, but the 200 will definitely take the main focus.
I watched it the other night, sorry Dunica, away from the blocks and the early speed you had. When you look at the 400, say, for Tokyo, would you look at having to slightly change your style of running, or would you be going as hard, as quick as you went the other night?
Yeah, so even the other night, like, I knew I had to get out hard, and I knew the girl in lane 3 was going to come out quick because she's just stormed the first lap and all races that she has. But when it comes to outdoors, you are going to have your own lane for the full 400, whereas indoors you do have to cut in after 150, so you are more in control and you can run more of your own race, whereas indoors you do have to be conscious of who's around you while running your own race at the same time to put yourself in contention at the bell. So it has been a while since I have run a 400 outdoors, but I'm definitely looking forward to coming out there again and racing them outdoors and see what can come from it.
And Phil, we are looking forward to watching you. Thanks so much for everything over the weekend. You brought us great excitement, and best of luck in the future.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. A quick and easy addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry or snack. Natural protein your way.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Now, it was almost a year ago when we spoke to Amber Barrett in Germany. Back then, she was looking forward to the season starting up again. And I have to say, we are 11 months, I think, since we spoke to Amber last. And we're in the exact same situation. Amber, how are you?
Hi, Marie. Great to hear from you again.
And you. So, look, Amber, as I mentioned there, when I was speaking to you last, you were on the cusp of getting back playing. You're with FC Cologne in Germany. So where are things now for you?
Yeah, like you said, things are kind of in the same situation I was when I spoke to you last year. We are now just on the countdown to the restart of the league, which begins in 2 weeks. So thankfully now it's something that's set in stone, and we have our restart date, which is something that we were really waiting for over the last couple of weeks, but finally it's here now.
So you're in the middle of pre-season, and I was thinking about this the other day. For people that are in the middle of pre-season and, you know, a lot of sport is locked down, does it make it a little bit easier going out, doing all that tough work, knowing that, OK, you're going to get back playing very soon and most people probably can't?
Yeah, I certainly think that's worth an advantage that, you know, since I've come back after Christmas, after the winter break, and, you know, we've always been able to train, which for me has been such an important thing. I think it's a little bit different when we came back at the start of January, because we had absolutely no idea when we were actually going to be given the go-ahead to start. So I think we got about 6 weeks in and everybody was kind of starting to get a little bit tetchy, because obviously at the end of the day you train to play games, and I think at that stage we still hadn't really had an idea of when things were going to go ahead. There was rumours of dates and all, but nothing was decided yet. So thankfully now the last couple of weeks, it seems like we've been in pre-season now for the last year and a half. So thankfully it's coming to an end now over the next couple of weeks.
Amanda, your first match back is against Bayern Munich even on the 28th. You beat them the last time you played them in October, 3-1. You must be looking forward to getting off to a good start.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, we talked about it today, just the players that we were saying that, you know, the first three games we were very lucky that we got off to such a good start, but the next couple of games are going to be, you know, they're going to be even more difficult. considering the circumstances that it's been that long since we've played. And luckily now the last weekend just passed and next weekend we'll actually get to play friendly games. But still going into the start of games that we did before Christmas, we had much more games going into practice and get ourselves ready. So it's definitely going to be that little bit more difficult, but you know, everybody's in the same boat. But as you said, it's very important that we get off to a good start in the first game back.
Amber, sport is the release, and it's great that you've been able to have that distraction during lockdown, but it must be tough being away from home.
Yeah, to be honest with you, it's a little bit different now at this stage because of being able to train. I think initially last year when the lockdown happened, I actually stayed in Germany for the original lockdown, which obviously we had no training, so everything was individual plans and you had to stay at home. So I think when I compare that period to this period, like there is no comparison. So it is, of course, it's always difficult being away from home, especially with everything that's going on in the world. But I was very lucky that I got a nice period over Christmas. And, you know, things like that just are important to recharge the batteries now. So since I've come back, being able to train, as you said, it gives you that release and it's everything you want to do. And it's exactly what I want to do. So in many ways, I'm very lucky to be in the position that I'm in.
You probably appreciate the position you're in, but I was looking through your squad earlier, and as I looked down through it, it's the majority of the players are German. There's a couple of Swiss, one Japanese. What about language? How is your German? How does communication go for you every day of the week?
Yeah, so I suppose that was probably my biggest concern when I made the move, was going to be the German and going to be the language barrier. I'm in a team where, you know, the majority of the girls do speak some English. Some girls have really good English and some girls have small forms of English. I think, you know, the majority of them would have learned it through school. So I think that my German has certainly improved. I do lessons every week to try and, you know, to help that. I'm definitely nowhere near being fluent yet, and there's definitely a lot of things that go completely over my head. But when something is important and needs to be said, the coach will usually addresses me in German, and if there's anything that I don't pick up on, I will say, look, I didn't understand that. And then between himself and other players, then they're able to relay the information back to me. So it's one of those things that was a little bit difficult, but thankfully, you know, I've a lot of girls around me that are very helpful, and, you know, there's never really any breakdowns of communication.
And teachers as well are very good at picking up things, so I'd say it's no bother to you, Amber. I just want to look back a little bit on last year, and obviously it was huge disappointment not making the Euros. Have you got over that, like, or is it still something that plays on your mind?
Yeah, to be honest with you, Marie, I think it's something that still plays on my mind. It certainly is something that I think when we've seen the draw during the week as well for the playoffs, that Northern Ireland got Ukraine. Again, I think that just, I suppose, rubs salt into the wound, because we would have absolutely loved to have been in the position to, you know, to be playing Northern Ireland in a playoff game, and or anybody, to be honest. We would have taken everybody on. So I suppose in that regard, it has been a difficult period. I think the more time we've moved away from the campaign, I think I've reflected a lot on it, and, you know, I still insist it was a missed opportunity from us, but I think at the same time we're going in the right direction and the plans are in place for us to continue to develop. So I think going into the World Cup campaign, you know, hopefully in April will be a kind draw for us, well, as kind as it can be, and then, you know, again, as I said before, we certainly have the talent in the squad to make that dream a reality.
Absolutely. Now, Chelsea have gone 1-0 up against Everton, with Godfrey scoring an OG on 31 minutes. So you mentioned those World Cup qualifiers, the draw coming up. I imagine that you just want to move forward now, Amber, and see how that plays out, and then start working towards the next big tournament.
That's exactly it, Marie. And I think now that, you know, I think with the draw coming up so quick in the next few weeks, that when we get that draw and we get that group and we know what we are to expect, I think then, you know, the focus can really solo in on what we have to do. And we know, looking at the way it is, the World Cup campaign is that a little bit more difficult. There's not as many places available to for qualification. So we certainly know it's going to be that little bit more difficult. But as I said before, it's a situation that everybody is going to be in the same boat. And I think we've seen, based on the Euro qualifications, that there is going to be upsets. They happen in every competition and every group. So we are certainly hoping that we will be one of the teams that will be causing an upset. And for most of us, you know, making sure that we put ourselves in to qualify for a major tournament.
Amber, I mentioned that you are a teacher. Now, a lot of the kids are back to school, but Easter is coming up. But luckily, you might have the answer to some of our prayers. So you were on hand today to launch the Spar School Zone. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, so it's basically an initiative now. What they're going to do is, I think it starts from Monday, that they're going to provide lesson plans to teachers and to students that trying to bring a football approach into the classroom, because obviously the primary five is a huge competition that's won over the last few years. And, you know, I came in as the ambassador last year, and unfortunately the tournament didn't go ahead in the Aviva, and then it's the same this year. They've just not been able to with the restrictions and everything. And it's such a huge event. And I think I was speaking to Helen Somerville this morning from Spar, and she said that last year they had the highest number of applicants from schools to actually take part. So I think in that way it's really positive now that hopefully next year that the tournament will actually be able to go ahead in the Aviva as originally planned. And I think that's something that it's really good for the kids to look forward to. And I think even the ideas for the lesson plans, it's good to have that just to mix it up a little bit. You know, they're bringing a fun approach into English and maths and history and geography. So I think it's really important. And of course, it's good to have the support from Spar and for the FAI for an initiative like this.
You know, Amber, we could have done with this a few weeks ago when the homeschool was going on. I think it would have helped a lot.
Yeah, I think that was the thing. They were waiting for all the parents to do all the hard work, and then they'd take over them for the next few weeks.
Well, I think I speak for all of us when I say that we have the utmost respect for teachers over from the last few months. Amber Barrett, thanks so much, and best of luck now in the new season.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Fuel your day the healthy way with Green Farm On the Go Chicken Bites. 100% natural and packed with protein.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Now we are going to turn our attention to football very, very shortly. But Ruby, first, you have some breaking news.
I do, Maria. French racing has been suspended until March 28 due to very serious outbreak of equine herpes virus originating in an FEI event held in Valencia in Spain. It's herpes virus, but there was 8 equine fatalities at a show in Spain, and most horses in France will be vaccinated against it. A lot of horses in Ireland and the UK would be as well, but it is spreading across the continent and is a very serious disease for all equine horses. That would be coming through show jumpers, but horse racing has been suspended in France at the moment.
Right, so what are the implications of that then, just in the racing world?
I would say it maybe has an effect on whatever French horses. There was one, maybe two, that might have been coming to race in Cheltenham, but I would say the importation of horses from the continent into Ireland, there'll be people looking at that.
Okay, well, we are going to be keeping an eye on that, no doubt, over the next few days. But first, let us cross over to Stamford Bridge, to Ian Beach.
We've got a goal here. It's Chelsea 1, Everton 0. We're still in the first half. We played 40 minutes now. Kai Havertz was the goal scorer, made by Chelsea's left wing back Marcus Alonso, who got free inside the Everton penalty area, pushing high up the field, and he just let the ball roll across his body and then crossed it in across the 6-yard box. And Havertz met it first time. It did take a slight deflection off Ben Godfrey as he tried to keep the ball out, but it is definitely Kai Havertz's goal. And as I speak, Alonso himself has got a good chance here, and he's just seen his shot saved by Jordan Pickford in the Everton goal, and that's gone behind for a corner. Everton are really struggling to get hold of the ball. Chelsea dominant in possession. It's Chelsea 1, Everton 0.
Thanks, Ian. And now we are delighted to be joined by Stephen Kelly to look back on what was a very interesting Premier League weekend, I have to say. And just when you think football couldn't surprise you any further, Manchester United were terrible, or Manchester City were terrible.
Yeah, they really were. And Ruby must be beside himself at the moment. It's a complete polar opposite for you, Marie, and Ruby, isn't it, right now?
He looks so happy.
Oh, I say he must
just
be delighted.
It's just wonderful.
City just didn't turn up. United performed really well, looked a threat going forward. Counter-attack, Martial was excellent, Luke Shaw was brilliant, Fernandez. And so a lot of critics that turn up in big games, and just as an all-round very good performance from United, and what I suppose none of us had really kind of predicted would have happened, especially with the way City are playing. But you've got to give credit where it's credit due, and they performed really well.
You got to give a lot of credit to Luke Shaw. Just everything that he has came through over the last few years, just the relentless trolling and the criticism, and for him to just bounce back and now be a player, okay, one that scores important goals, but just be consistently performing, and, you know, you would think maybe would be in a World Cup squad.
Oh, or Euro squad. Yeah, you would feel Chilwell, who is not playing at Chelsea at the moment. I know. Listen, England have an absolute abundance of fullbacks at the moment, but Luke Shaw is playing extremely well. The last month or so, he's really upped his levels. And just in that game, for his goal, you see him breaking away, and it's Kevin De Bruyne chasing after him. And Kevin De Bruyne is no slouch, and he just takes off, and you think, wow, the power and the pace. And he gets in the box and he finishes off. But everything about his game has been really, really good, and he's just shown a resilience and a fitness to him, which has been really nice, because before you always question whether or not he can maintain his level for long periods, but now he looks like he's at a real peak fitness, which is nice to see.
Stephen, players always deserve the credit like Luke Shaw, but what about Ollie there? He set United up correctly to get the result. Is he underappreciated? You know, everyone's calling for his head now. You see results like this, or is it just another inconsistent performance?
I think it's because when they show something like this, and they do it against City, and I think City didn't turn up the way we've expected over the course of the last few months. But when they can do this and turn the team over that good, and then they drop the levels, that's where the criticism comes in, because you're like, why can't the manager motivate them to be at that level all the time? And why is he not making them feel like these team are in contention? Because the players they have on paper and the squad they've got good depth, they've got great depth actually. They've got some really talented players, they've spent a fortune. They should be competing. And it's the question mark is always going to be whether he's the one that can make them compete. And I suppose that's why it's always up in the air.
How much of a difference do you think Dean Henderson is making in goals? He's obviously making the most of his opportunity with David De Gea away on paternity leave.
Yeah, I think he's been waiting in the wings. You can see Sheffield United, and I know who they brought in to replace him was excellent, but he had a massive, massive impact on them last season. And this year, you can see that they're struggling without him. He's come into the side, he's had to be patient, he's had to wait, but he's really wanted to kind of push for a starting berth. And there's an opportunity to come up here now. David De Gea, it's going to be hard to drop him, but he really is performing well. He looks confident. The back four look assured in front of him, and you feel like you have a goalkeeper that's making saves, coming, commanding. That helps you as well.
City didn't exactly test them much at the weekend, though, did they?
No, Sterling missed an absolute sitter. It seems to be in this fixture, it seems to go past all the time. But they weren't themselves. They didn't perform to the level we expected. They didn't play out with the lovely football. Like, they weren't attacking in numbers. They weren't clinical. De Bruyne wasn't finding those true balls. They were off the pace. They really were. But you can't take anything away from the United attack. Them and getting out of trap so quickly, Martial running up and getting that penalty so early, getting the goal, that just set them up.
I was reading today, Sterling has never scored against Manchester United, which is really interesting. Right, let's move on to Liverpool. I was reading actually Malky Clerkin's piece today, and it got me thinking. He's a brilliant article about kids going back to sport in the Irish Times, and he's talking about the pandemic when he said, if there's a lesson to be taken from the past 12 months, it's to never presume things can't get worse. We don't know if we're near the end, the middle, or even the beginning of it all. And I thought that can apply to Liverpool right now as well.
that's never true. Word when it comes to Liverpool at the moment. I was delighted with the results for my club Fulham to come around and get a big win at Anfield. They don't get wins away from home. They beat Everton and Liverpool up there, which is they never do. So that's huge for them in the goal for staying up. But from Liverpool's point of view, the team, they look so off the pace. The quality of players that is coming in to replace the players that went out, it's just, there's no comparison. You can't compare like for like. Their squad is so thin, and when those players are missing that they need, like the likes of Van Dijk and Henderson, they're irreplaceable. And the question marks are now going to be Liverpool board based on, have you invested enough in the team to counteract when we have injuries, or can you bring players in that make a difference? Jota getting back is a massive boost for them, and you see that volley he had, but you know, all over the pitch they're just looking weak, and lit, and Fulham were the better side.
It's interesting because, you know, last season or the season before, we were talking about Michael Edwards and how much of a genius he was at bringing in players. And you're right, like that squad, it doesn't have the depth. It can't seem to cope with the injuries, and it seems like there's a weakness in that squad now.
Yeah, absolutely. what Liverpool did, and what I suppose, and City actually took a little bit out of their book. They identified the areas where they really need to improve, and they went and spent big on a goalkeeper and a centre back. But they went and bought some, probably the two best in those positions. So they brought those players that have propelled them up into the winning leagues, winning Champions League. Now those players are missing. Who do they have to replace them? And the drop in standard of those players is such a gulf in class. It's huge. And you can't underestimate how much of that impacts the team. If you bring in players that are okay instead, and if your players are exceptional, that's going to affect you. And they have so many outs, so many missing. Then the questions I ask now, right? You knew this was the case at Christmas. You knew these players weren't coming back for a long time. Were you willing to invest in this club and propel them forward? Because you know when these players come back, will they even be the same? You don't really know when you're out for a long time. So that's the question mark.
And Stephen, what about the Kane and Bale show for Spurs?
Yeah, I know. Another one tonight. Brilliant.
Great weekend.
Oh, I know. Brilliant weekend for me. And me and Ruby are dancing around the place.
Happy days.
No, it was just the resurgence of him. The last couple of weekends, last few weeks, he's been getting limited game time, and in Europa League, he looked good. And then the last two weekends, he's been absolutely brilliant. Bale has been phenomenal. He looks quick. He looks strong. He's going up players for the goal. When he whips it out wide, force and darts into the box, and he's pointing at the front post where he wants to run, and then Kane heads it back to him. Just an unbelievable all-round performance from him. But the combination between the two, you throw Son into that mix, and then Ali played last week. You got Moore, who was excellent the weekend. It looks really bright. It looks really promising. I just hope they can sustain this momentum going forward for the rest of the season.
And Bale looks to be inspiring Harry Kane as well. I mean, his third goal with his right foot was an absolute screamer.
Oh, it was a sensational goal. Matt already played his part as well. Just perfect weight of ball, just drop back to him for a hit for his time. But it was just he's just a quality player. He really is. He's got everything to his game. He showed sides of his game, his setting up of goals, his passing ability, his distribution. But then when it comes to finishing, there's no one in the league that's as good a finisher as Harry Kane. And that just showed there. He's a world-class centre-forward. And it's just a worry for me that, you know, will he stay there? Because you have Bale there now, and he looks like he's bringing momentum and showing that the team can push for something. But realistically, if they're not going to win something, Kane's got to be thinking that he wants to win something.
But where would he go, though?
Man City is United. The one that I think. United, but if you want to guarantee a title, you're thinking City, isn't it? That's the only one. And City at the moment don't have a centre forward. Aguero is on the downward spiral. He'll probably come back at some point, but that's the only one I can see.
Okay, Stephen Kelly, thanks so much for joining us. It is halftime in the Chelsea-Everton game, and it is still 1-0 Chelsea. We're going to take a quick break, and then it's golf.
Game on 2FM. With Green Fern, the nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. We're going to go to golf, and of course the big tournament the weekend, the Arnold Palmer Invitational, was won by Bryson DeChambeau with an average driving distance of 321 yards. It felt like 321 miles at times, Gary Murphy. What a display.
It did, actually. Yeah, it was brilliant. We were very, very lucky the last few weeks, Ruby, where the entertainment value is through the roof, and I think it almost improved a bit last week because, you had the gap with Westwood and DeChambeau distance-wise and age-wise and all that sort of stuff, and it came right down to the wire to the final grain and final putt. So it was brilliant. But DeChambeau's, he's just box office. His appeal seems to be growing week on week.
Gary, we talk so often about whether or not the mighty hitting is ruining the sport, but it didn't really feel like that this weekend. It actually just felt like a really enjoyable watch.
It was, I think, the fact that the weather was so tough on Sunday helped really for the drama, because I think DeChambeau, I think he parred the last 12 or 13 holes, so it was really a slog, which showed another side to his game too. I know he hit some. Obviously, six was great, great fun to watch, and he played to the crowd and all of that sort of stuff. And it really is a throwback to '91 when John Daly came out and he was hitting the ball distances nobody else could, But he's able to play as well. That's the big thing. He's not just someone who stands up and slashes at us. And I guess, like, to use the boxing, different styles make, you know, great fights. And Westwood is trying to plot his way around, hasn't won on the PGA Tour for 11 years and trying to get through all of that. And DeChambeau, just when he gets in contention, he's, I know brave is a strong word for golfers, but, you know, he really handles the fear of winning very well. And that's his eighth victory on the PGA Tour, his 10th as a pro. And he's only played, you know, just over 120 odd events. So it's a serious strike rate, really. And you throw a major in on top of that as well. And then he's got that X factor, you know, he can hit the ball much further than anyone else. And that's always an exciting thing in golf, because it's something that kind of every player is obsessed with. Anytime you change a driver or a new set of clubs, you're always kind of hoping they'll go a little bit further than the previous ones. And he really, you know, has bought into that fact that if he can gain a huge advantage by increasing his distance, it'll make it easier for him to win these tournaments. And it's certainly bearing fruit at the moment.
You're talking about Lee Westwood plodding his way around, 12 birdies, 28 pars, 4 bogeys. He just needs to convert some of those pars into more birdies, doesn't he?
I think Sunday was a difficult day for that. I think he hung in really well. He hasn't, you know, he didn't have a lot of form going into the tournament. 17th was his best finish so far this season. But he just showed his class. He's definitely going to be in the Ryder Cup team come September, which a couple of years ago was just never going to happen, really. But, you know, he won down the Ned Bank, which revived his career. And then he won in Abu Dhabi and won the Order of Merit last year. So he's someone that Europe's definitely going to need, because you're going to need his experience, which he showed in spades on Sunday. It was just a second shot in 16 let him down, really. But that's just the DeChambeau effect. I mean, he had him under the gun the whole time, and Lee was on 100% trying to get by him, but DeChambeau just did too much for him. But, you know, DeChambeau had to hold two slippy putts in the final two greens, and I'm sure Lee will be absolutely thrilled with his week. He just seems to have a totally different attitude to the game now, and it's certainly bearing fruit. He's 48 this year, and there's plenty left in the tank.
Yeah, he was certainly entertaining anyway. It was difficult watching Rory struggling, though, to closing 76. And his quotes afterwards were interesting, Gary. He said there were some good parts this week, some stuff that he didn't know the word to describe it. He said he's a little dejected, and he said he's looking to go in a different direction, maybe. Maybe, he said, I need a spark. I need something. I just don't seem to have it. What's your analysis of that?
Well, I think the final round, he started 4 behind. It's a tough day. It's going to be very difficult for him to shoot 4 under par in those conditions. So he was always going to need a little bit of help from the leaders, which didn't come. So he's pushing, and you can see with his tee shot on 6, you know, he's trying to smash it the whole way around the corner and make eagle, which he actually did. Unfortunately, it was with his third ball, because he hit the first two in the water. And that was his day done, really, because he's only there to win golf tournaments. And you know, he was professional, and he kept going in that. But the spark was gone on the 6T, and it's a difficult place. And, you know, he's only there to win tournaments, and that was over. His comments were interesting. It seemed to suggest that maybe he's thinking of, you know, changing things up, possibly. I don't know where that's going to, what angle that's going to be. Is it going to be a coach or a caddy or whatever? Maybe start working with someone on the mental side of the game. But he's just not this time. Like, he's actually defending champion this week because we got cancelled last year with COVID. But he's just not on all cylinders at the moment. And when the standard is so high and the field's so deep, and when we saw Morikawa win last week, and you think he's the next big thing, and DeChambeau does his thing this week. Dustin Johnson won a couple of weeks ago in Saudi. So it's, the margins are very, very fine, and if Rory is not on full pelt, he's not going to win golf tournaments. And that's probably why he's trying to maybe look elsewhere to find a little edge, because he's just a little bit flat at the moment.
Okay, two quick things before we finish up. Give us a prediction for next weekend, please.
It's probably a heart over, or head over heart, but, well, heart over head, rather. Got to go with Jordan Spieth, because I think he's just showing a lot of really good things, and I love watching him on a Sunday night, because if he does win, it'll be drama and excitement. He doesn't have a brilliant record around there, but he's in great form. And Chris Kirk would be a big outsider for a bit of an upset.
And just finally then, before we finish up, just a quick word on Leona Maguire. Just brilliant this weekend. We see her clinching her first LPGA Tour top 10 on US soil and edging closer to the top 100 in the world.
Yeah, it's amazing. We should have started with Leona, actually, because that's the big Irish in this story. And it's just wonderful to see. She's kind of found her feet on tour now, which is a big challenge for any young. I know she's 26, but it's only really her second full season on the LPGA Tour. It's the hardest place for women to play golf. All the best players in the world are there, very similar to the PGA Tour. So you really have to be on top of your game. And she's just flying. First two events, she's up 16th on the Order of Merit. Made her biggest check last weekend, and it's all great and fantastic to see, because she's an absolute credit to herself, and great to see an Irish person up there flying the flag.
Yeah, she's absolutely brilliant. She was my weekend sporting highlight. I was delighted to see her do so well. Gary Murphy, thanks so much, and we will talk to you next week. That is all we have time for. We're going to be back tomorrow, though, and we have our Cheltenham preview night with Ruby Walsh taking centre stage. No pressure, Ruby. I'm building it up now for you. And we will have Robbie Power and Leon Blanche as well from Boyle Sports. Okay, and Stadair is up next.